Some doctors call them GOMERS. That's an acronym for Get Out of My Emergency Room. But for hypochondriacs, their illnesses are very real. Hypochondria has been with us for centuries. Susan Bauer, a psychologist and science writer, examines this phobia from all sides in her new book, Hypochondria: Woeful Imaginings. I asked her to begin with a definition.
Hypochondria is a preoccupation with health or disease whose intensity disrupts normal living habits. That's really important. Almost anyone can be preoccupied with a symptom if it gets bad enough, but they usually just do something about it and that's the end of it. But this is a person who's so preoccupied with symptoms or with the fear of getting a disease that their normal living habits are disrupted more than they really should be, even if there is something slightly wrong with them.
You say that hypochondriacs don't play by the rules of being sick. What do you mean?
Well, I mean that really the number one rule in our culture for sick people is you're supposed to want to get better. And yet the hypochondriac seems to just have a recurring number of symptoms and problems. And at some point, the doctor, the long-suffering wife or husband, finally says, you know, it really feels as if you just don't want to get well. What's going on? It's as if their illnesses are their treasures, and yet they moan and groan just the way all of us do.
There's something called the Whitley Index, and you include that in the back of your book, and it's basically a little questionnaire, and depending on which questions you say yes to and which you say no to, it can diagnose if you're a hypochondriac, and if so, which kind. Can I go through a couple of these questions and you could tell me what they're measuring?
I can try. Let's try that.
Okay. This is one I like. If a disease is brought to your attention through radio, television, newspapers, or someone you know, do you worry about getting it yourself?
That's asking the person if they're suggestible, which has been known for centuries, millennia,
right,
to be the hallmark of hypochondriacs.
Yes, it's sometimes hard to interview doctors about certain diseases. Okay, how about this one? If you are ill and someone tells you that you are looking better, are you annoyed?
Okay, that one is tapping the firm conviction of disease. The person who has unremitting symptoms, they know they've got a poor back, their mother had it, their grandmother had it, and anyone who thinks that they look better is the enemy, because what they really mean is, why don't you do your housework or whatever.
And finally, are you afraid of illness? That's an interesting question. I mean, who isn't? But I guess this is a matter of degree, huh? How afraid
yeah,
you are.
Yeah, it really is. Also, I think maybe the question might have been clearer. Are you afraid of illnesses you don't have?
Right. Your book is in part a historical survey of hypochondria. And it's really interesting how the symptoms of hypochondria have changed over the centuries. For instance, no one takes liver pills anymore.
True, definitely.
What are some of the ways historically that hypochondriacs express their symptoms?
Well, I think what you'll see throughout is that the diseases that hypochondriacs are particularly afraid of and thus prone to are diseases for which there is no cure and for which there is, in their culture, a tinge of sort of shame or guilt about them. For example, in the 19th century, syphilis, which was quite a serious disease and there was no really effective cure, was greatly feared. Today, cancer is number one on the disease hit parade. Heart problems second, and AIDS is, I don't think anyone really knows. You can't say quite where it comes, but it's just a perfect candidate for all sorts of fears.
It's a very scary thing because many people have rightful fears of having contacted it. So it becomes the kind of thing where it's impossible to draw the line between monitoring your symptoms and being, you know, absurdly fixated on something.
Except that, again, it's that preoccupation, does it or does it not disrupt normal living habits, and is it disproportionate to the risk? So if a person has been living with perhaps a succession of persons who are using intravenous drugs, that person has a very reasonable fear of AIDS and should be test it or do whatever he or she thinks is necessary to protect themselves and the others that they love. However, if a person has had a one-night stand with a farm girl in Iowa 9 years ago, that person should not be preoccupied to the point of disrupting his daily living.
There are many theories, medical, psychological, sociological, about why certain people become hypochondriacs. Are there any current theories that you find of special interest?
I guess one that I think is particularly interesting is that there is an attempt to test empirically a very old belief about hypochondria, namely that hypochondriacs come into the world more sensitive, more jumpy, if you will, than regular people. And experimenters are beginning to find that indeed hypochondriacs can register tinier stimuli, the merest flash of light, the drop of a pin, and are just a more reactive organism than people who never become hypochondriacal. That's what people from Shakespeare for the next two centuries said, oh, I'm so delicate.
Why are you so interested in the subject that you've written a whole book about it?
Well, there were two reasons, one personal and one intellectual. The personal one was that during college, I wildly overreacted to physical symptoms. And although I didn't bother doctors with them, I sweated bullets. I had the nightmares. In college, my throat used to start to close up, and boy, I was sure death was around the corner. So I have those memories. Intellectually, I wanted to write in the history of medicine, but I really wanted to pick a topic where I had to consider the biology, the physiology, I had to consider the psychology and the sociology of the subjects, the sufferers. And there is no disease, I maintain, that is as perfect for forcing you to be interdisciplinary than hypochondria. It's an emotional problem. They take them to physical, you know, to medical doctors complaining of physical symptoms. And the sociology is important.
Do you think that most of us have hypochondria to one degree or another? For instance, I'm the kind of patient who, when I'm going to see a doctor, I just assume not find out the worst thing that can happen to me if my disease progresses, or the worst side effect I can get from the medicine I'm taking, because I'm sure that it'll happen, you know, or that I'll wake up in the middle of the night imagining that symptom is beginning.
Yeah, I would guess then that you're a person who is aware of your penchant for, or at least ability to exaggerate, to think the worst, and you're coping by saying, look, give me the amount of information I need to know today, and if I need more later, I'll face that then. I think almost everyone either knows somebody who's hypochondriacal or has experienced enough, at least by the time they're in their mid-20s or 30s, to know what I'm talking about when I talk about hypochondria. But no, not everyone is hypochondriacal.
Did writing this book wreak havoc on your sense of being prone to certain symptoms?
No, quite the reverse.
Uh-huh.
As Otto Fenichel would say, belated mastery. It was something I really wanted to do. And it's interesting that when I started the book, it took about 4 years, not working full-time, but I really had to educate myself in a lot of ways. When I started the book, I would read things about hypochondriacs and ask myself if they pertain to me, and the majority, I would say, absolutely not. Oh, you know, really quite annoyed by some people. By the time I was finished the book, I was nodding and saying, yes, yes, profound, right. I really learned quite a bit about myself in doing the book.
Susan Bauer is the author of Hypochondria, Woeful Imaginings, published by the University of California Press. She spoke to us from WGBH in Boston. This is Fresh Air.